Hey there. Ever wonder what happens to all those amazing screenplays that never make it to the big screen? Well, wonder no more. Welcome to Table Read Podcast, where we bring those undiscovered gems to life. Picture this, talented actors giving incredible performances with the occasional laugh or blooper thrown in, produced by award-winning pros. From drama to comedy, TV pilots to feature films, there's something for everyone. And guess what? We release new episodes every week, so don't forget to hit that subscribe button. Table Read Podcast, where great stories finally get their chance to shine.
Do not underestimate the power of PlayStation.
Beyond.
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 Hey.
Welcome, everybody, to Beyond, episode 476. I'm Max Scoville, and I'm joined by Brian Altano, who gets no paper privileges.
I'm throwing your papers next time.
You can't do that. They're mine. They're over here. Andrew Goldfarb.
You can share mine if you want.
It's okay, thanks.
And Marty Sleva.
I have my own papers, but I'm glad that the two of you are sharing.
Yeah.
Good job, everybody. We got a great show lineup today. First of all, we're going to talk about a studio closing. That's always fun and not depressing. Meanwhile, Horizon Zero Dawn is coming out 3 days before Zelda, which inevitably will cause people to compare the two. We found out the name of God of War, Kratos' son. I don't know why I said God of War Kratos. That's a weird way to phrase it.
That's
and
his
then, of
title.
Course, apparently there is some good banging in Mass Effect Andromeda.
What? Also, that was a quote around good banging.
Good banging.
Really?
Yeah. Good banging to thee. Good banging. Good banging.
Good banging to you.
That's a good greeting to do. Anyway.
And also with you.
First things first, Guerrilla Cambridge closed. This is, of course, the studio that was behind Medieval 1 and 2, Killzone Mercenary, which is the Vita shooter, and more recently, Riggs. This is sort of a bummer because they make games, and games are great, and we like them.
Well, yeah, and it's also like there have been so many Sony closures in the past, like, 5 years, like, pretty much since Vita came out. And they actually only became part of Guerrilla after, I think it was when, like, it was around when, like, Big and Zipper and all those other, like, launch game studios closed.
Yeah.
They kind of became a sister studio with Guerrilla, which seemed promising for them to stick around for a while. But, I mean, I don't know if Riggs just didn't sell or what, but it's a bummer to see more talented developers just out there.
Yeah. I mean, Riggs was sort of positioned as what they thought was going to be the killer IP for not only PSVR, but VR in general. And, you know, it seems like VR, like, it has folks like Max and Brian who obviously love it, but I don't think it made quite the splash in its first couple months that they thought it would.
Right.
And then I imagine that this game specifically didn't make quite the splash. So it feels like they sort of went all in on this and then the writing was on the wall afterwards.
Yeah. I mean, I think it's very tough, specifically with something like Riggs. I didn't think the demo was very good at indicating how great that game is, because that game is actually really awesome. And in terms of like how robust you can make a VR game, like that's actually one of the most sort of like thought out in depth. They were supporting it with stuff like crazy after launch, tournaments and stuff like that. The comfort mode levels in just the customization of controls for VR in that game are fantastic. And again, not really indicative of what you can find in the demo.
Yeah, I jumped in with the demo and I kind of hated it.
Yeah.
It gives you the option to play like sort of the comfort mode where it kind of gives you blinders, I guess, to make you less disoriented. But just in terms of controls, like I was kind of used to VR, but I wasn't blown away by it. Also, it didn't really, it felt very like, very launch title-y, and then it didn't really have like a kind of strong identity.
Mm-hmm.
Like it's sort of this,
I mean, it was like, you know, VR mech soccer basically.
Yeah,
or,
right.
You know, it was like sports meets, you know, Exo Squad, which I'm down with.
Which is a cool idea.
Yeah, it's a cool idea. And, you know, these guys worked really hard on this game, very passionate about it. I think they did everything they could for making one of the most standout and kind of more sort of like grandiose PSVR launch games. But I don't really know how well a lot of those VR launch games did. We saw the numbers, and I believe Job Simulator and Batman were two of the best-selling ones.
Yeah. Yep.
So if Riggs wasn't really up there, I mean, what do you do with something like that, right?
Yeah, I mean, it's tough too because it's a very similar thing to Killzone Mercenaries on Vita, which is, I think, like far and away the best first-person shooter on Vita, and it's really great. It runs great. It's super fun, but it's one of those, do I want a full first-person shooter campaign on Vita?
Yeah.
Which, like, I reviewed the game for 1UP, and I was like, this is really good. It's very uncomfortable to play a game that requires that much dexterity on a Vita. But also just so few people had a Vita that, like, they just couldn't like, you know, meet the sales requirements that went into something that, especially of that
then.
Budget.
Like, yeah, by the time it was out after, like, Resistance Burning Skies and that Call of Duty game. Like,
Declassified. Yeah.
Yeah, there were just so many bad shooters by that point. Yeah. I mean, this just bums me out because I think Sony has lost. Like, we're obviously going to have our Naughty Dogs, and I'm sure Sucker Punch is fine, and I'm sure, you know, Bend, we'll see what happens with Days Gone. But I worry about these smaller studios fading away because it's just, like, I don't know, you worried that after a certain point, like, it takes away part of the identity and the creativity and the cool people taking risks that are within Sony. I mean, we lost Evolution. We lost a lot of studios that I think were just trying to do, like, even if they weren't my thing, they had something that was a little different than just another third-person action game.
I mean, that's we're in a tough position now because Santa Monica, you know, had something in development for a long time that got canceled. A lot of people got let go, and then now we know they're working on God of War. Bend was dormant from the Vita launch, and now we know they're working on Days Gone. We haven't heard anything from Sucker Punch. Polyphony's working on Gran Turismo Forever. Japan Studios is about to release Gravity Days, and then they just released The Last Guardian, but now there's sort of really nothing on the plate in front of them. So we haven't heard from Media Molecule and Dreams in a very long time.
In a very long time,
So I feel like I'm a little worried about sort of the state of first-party gaming.
Yeah, and I think it's immensely important to distinguish the fact that, you just named a bunch of really awesome-sounding first-party games that are going to be phenomenal. I mean, stuff like God of War is exclusive. Huge. But you look at, I think, if you look at this generation right now, Sony's obviously crushing it sales-wise. Games-wise, I think they're doing an incredible job, too. If you just look at, like, kind of Metacritic comparing exclusives, they just, I feel like, have more exclusives than Microsoft in general right now. But gamers are fickle, and just because they're kicking ass right now off of the strength of what they've been doing the last few years, when Scorpio comes out and it's Sony's turn to come up with a new console and they have to, you know, rally their troops together and they have less and less teams on their side, I think you might be looking at a different scenario. I think that right now what they're doing is great and it's working, but I do fear that in 2 or 3 years with all these studio closures, they're not going to have that sort of arsenal that they've had for, like, the last 10 years.
Well, they're also kind of focusing, it feels like they're streamlining a little bit. Like, a lot of these studios, like, I think Cambridge made Little Big Planet PSP, and they made, like, these little, like, you would get these people making not really even ports, but just, like, smaller versions. Obviously, Bend made Uncharted Golden Abyss, which is a game in its own right. But I think you're seeing less and less of that. I think they're letting kind of the big studios have their big marquee AAA tentpole titles. But I think that leaves less room for the support studios.
Yeah, totally.
Like, if you look at Ubisoft, like, they have those, like, a studio like Annecy didn't have its own game for years and years. They just did the multiplayer for Assassin's Creed, and now they have Steep. And it's like, it's not like Steep is going to set the world on fire. I don't think that's selling a billion copies. Yeah. So what does that mean for that studio?
But it's just, it's interesting talking about those first party Sony studios, and we're getting a lot of the same sort of shaky ground on the Microsoft side as well, which, you know, Scalebound wasn't first party, obviously, but it was exclusive. Yeah. Stuff like Fable Legend getting canceled and Project Spark having, you know, its development sort of just removed. I feel like the era of a console success hinging on a first party game or an exclusive is gone. Like, I don't think the reason Sony is so far ahead isn't because something like Bloodborne and Uncharted are so much better than, you know, Halo and Gears.
Yeah.
It's the fact that Sony's done, I think, such an incredible job of aligning themselves with these huge third-party games like Destiny and Call of Duty and Battlefront and now Resident Evil, that even though the game's not an exclusive, like, people look to the PS4 as the place to play those games.
I think exclusives help a ton when it comes to positioning the console as a bundle. If you look at Uncharted 4, the game sold almost 9 million units, and I think a significant portion of those, I don't have the numbers on exactly what that is, I don't think anybody does, are the bundled version of that console with that game. And if you sat there, you walked into a store and you said, all right, I can get the Xbox with Forza, or I can get the PS4 with Uncharted, you're probably sitting there going, like, well, what do I like better? You know, like, kind of adventure action games, or do I like racing games? And if you lean in towards the adventure action stuff, which I believe most people probably do, because racing is still sort of like, kind of just a smaller group of people are into that, you would go for that. So I think down the line, when you put all these things together, it makes it a better looking system. But I do worry that in, like, 5 years, if every console, or at least Sony and Microsoft, they're sort of downplaying the need for major exclusives, then you're just battling on specs and apps and controllers, and it's not really about the games anymore, or which has the better third-party looking game, you know?
Well, there's another thing going on here. We're talking about this as like a first-party, you know, obviously Microsoft has more of a background in developing software because they started off as a software company, and Sony is better with hardware. It's also interesting because these are kind of like, looking at the games that Guerrilla Cambridge did, they're kind of like double A games, you know? They're not like triple A, like, you know, you said that they did Little Big Planet for PSP or whatever. And that's, again, it's taking somebody else's big AAA baby and kind of doing your own, not quite port, not quite.
Yep.
Yeah.
And this wasn't the Guerrilla Studio that did the Killzone games, and this isn't the Guerrilla that's doing Horizon. That's an absolute.
It's like a little kind of side. Yeah. But we've seen this so much over the past few years, is the death of, like, kind of the middle class of games.
Yeah.
You know, like, there used to be, like, there were, you know, little tiny indie games, kind of. Those have kind of gotten bigger since then. And there were big, huge AAA blockbusters. But then there was this whole kind of, like, you know.
THQ is a perfect example.
Well, is it maybe that when you look at stuff like Killzone Mercenary and you look at Riggs, that they're maybe making something that's way overly ambitious for a platform that's not necessarily...
Doesn't have the user base?
Yeah.
It doesn't have the user base for that?
I mean, they're trying to make, like, a AAA launch title, but they're... I mean, I don't know if it's the studio's not up for it, if they're not getting the support from Sony, or the fact that there's not a base there to, you know...
Like, making a AAA first-person shooter for a PlayStation Vita is kind of like trying to sell steak at a movie theater or something. Mm-hmm. You know, it's like, I don't necessarily think people are looking...
I need a movie steak.
It's also...
I would too, but not a lot of people would.
Yeah.
We also don't have a lot of transparency on what the politics are like. Like, they went from being Sony Cambridge to being Guerrilla Cambridge, and maybe that came with making Killzone. Like, maybe a lot of that was just that might even be the reason they became part of Guerrilla was to have that tech. I don't know. Like, I think, like, I did think it was cool when they announced this. They said they're trying to restructure them among, like, as many jobs as possible.
Oh, yeah, reallocate them to different studios.
Yeah, which is good.
I hope so. Like, I was about to say, like, I really hope that everyone working at this company lands on their feet because it's. I mean, I don't feel like. Like, if when you see a studio close that hasn't made great games, you're like, oh, I wish them the best. But these guys made, like, really awesome, really ambitious stuff.
Interesting things.
And ambition is one of the most important things that we can have in this world, especially in the games industry. And I never want to see that suffocated.
Yep. Yeah, and I really hope that this is, you know, like, having a first-party studio is a boon with everything you were talking about with exclusives. It can also be a liability because, like, Naughty Dog churns out a game every 2 or 3 years, but other studios don't. They might take 8 or 9. And I think, like, it's a really weird situation where... I hope, like, when Dreams does come out, I hope Mini Molecule is fine. And I hope whatever Sucker Punch does well. I hope Days Gone does well. Yeah, because I do worry about these studios just not necessarily having the room to breathe.
I agree. And it's also, it's a matter of defining the identity of what the PlayStation 4 is and what PlayStation is. I mean, I'm not saying that they're basically going to get attacked from all sides this year, but there's a new Nintendo console launching in March and there's a new Xbox console launching this fall. Mm-hmm. So that's further, like, more than ever, Sony needs to sort of say, like, but this is who we are. Mm-hmm. This is what we represent. This is our army. These are our studios. These are our games. I mean, with less and less teams on their side, I worry about that. And it really just becomes things like exclusive DLC for third-party games, and then maybe new modes, or maybe, like, early access.
Or,
like,
VR support.
That's why I'm so curious about the alternate reality where Vita did catch on, and where a lot of these studios were, like, where Killzone Mercenary was the beginning of a great engine on Vita that did bring console-quality games. Like, I obviously will never know, and we'll never see that, but that might have brought projects for 5 more years. So how was it?
That was crazy. Yeah, it was wild. Yeah.
That's awesome.
I mean, I think that's so interesting, too, that, like, they...
PS4 one of their, Island.
That this studio's biggest bet... on Vita was basically making the most ambitious game on that system, I think, outside of Uncharted. Yeah. And we all said, no one wants to play games like that on the go. And the Nintendo's like, what about Skyrim? like they're basically doubling down on all the lessons that Sony learned from the Vita years ago. So we'll see how all of this pans out. Well, this is so fascinating to me.
There was that Elder Scrolls game that was good in the works for PSP.
Yeah.
There was a Saints Row in the works for PSP.
There's all this
stuff that the studios making that stuff that weren't attached to the hardware themselves.
Bioshock Vita turned out really well.
Yeah, I love that game. That's really good. I've been enjoying that a lot.
You're in that weird season 2 part of Fringe where they go to the other universe. Also, I want to back up and say, I think Cambridge made PSP Little Big Planet.
They did.
Okay.
Yes.
Yeah.
I was doing research beforehand.
Yeah.
I mean, that's got to kind of suck because they're almost like an internal third party. It's like you've got this name that's attached to, like, an IP that's attached to a big studio, like, you know, Naughty Dog makes Uncharted, unless it's Golden Abyss, in which case Ben makes it. Mm-hmm. You know,
Media Molecule's attached to Little Big Planet. Unless
I mean, that. I wonder how much that has to do with a studio getting closed. If they're like, what have they made? Well, they did this thing that's sort of not theirs, and they did this thing which is sort of not theirs. And what else?
And maybe it's, hey, we're going to close you unless you can work on this. Like, hey, like, we don't want your weird new IP that you pitched, but we need somebody to make Killzone Mercenary. You know, I think
I would read an entire book about studio publisher relationships and studio console relationships, and, like, how often somebody like, I know, Shuhei Yoshida or anybody at the top of Sony checks in on Guerrilla and they go, what are you working on? Like, what kind of budget do you need? What kind of help do you need? Like, not saying he didn't do that, but I have no idea how that works.
Sure.
And if these teams are sort of left on their own on islands. And then once a year, it's like, I mean, if you look at the Scalebound situation, my theory with that is that they pitched, we need another year, we need more budget, and Microsoft looked at the bottom line and said it's not really going to work out. Tell me if I'm wrong on that. That's just kind of a guess.
I mean, yeah, we don't know what happens behind closed doors, but that's so, as good of a guess.
So when you see studios close, when you see games get canceled, I wonder how much of that could have been saved by sort of like speccing out the project better earlier on, or just getting into over their heads, or getting more help. Like,
well, and that's why the first party versus second and third is so different, because when you own the studio, I think you're willing to put more down,
right?
You know, sure. Whereas like for something like Scalebound, maybe they really did have a set budget and that was the only amount, you know, they were willing to go up to.
Yeah. Or even how like, you know, exclusive third party DLC and early access stuff comes together. I don't know if that's a matter of like Infinity Ward being like, hey, Sony, we've got this thing, or Sony being like, hey, Infinity Ward, what are you working on? So I don't know. This stuff is so damn cool to me.
Yeah. Anyway, so that's all about games that maybe aren't coming out, or, you know, studios closing or whatever, and that's depressing. But the good news is games are continuing to come out. Horizon Zero Dawn is coming out 3 days before Zelda. Horizon comes out on February 28th, and Zelda comes out on March 3rd. Obviously, these are two very different games, but they're also similar games in that they're about, you know, riding around on some animals in a big field and using a bow and arrow to shoot things.
Yeah.
What do we make of this? Yeah. We did a little bit on Up at Noon about how...
Why is this happening?
Yeah.
It's so frustrating.
Which are you going to play? Huh?
It's so frustrating.
Which one?
I barely played anything so far this year.
Go to the head. Which is it? Horizon or Zelda?
I can't answer that.
You got to answer it.
I can't answer that. I can't answer that.
Well, whichever one you pick depends on which podcast you're allowed on. You know that, right?
I'm allowed on both.
You're going to go on NBC. You're going to go on Podcast Beyond.
It's not wrestling, okay?
Yeah, but what if it was?
No.
The NWO is here.
The answer is easy. We'll get Horizon probably like a week before it comes out, and then we'll play that and finish it, and then we'll get Zelda.
But for normal people out there who aren't, you know, awful, you know, scum of the earth like you.
Welcome to the privileged cast.
I knocked over some parcels, some presents that people sent us in the mail. I'm like, these both look like, I mean, they look kind of similar to play. Obviously, they're very different games. Horizon is a brand new IP. We don't really know what the hell this world is, but Zelda's like, you know, it's comfort food. It's returning to, you know, a different iteration of a familiar universe. And, you know, it's going to be on a new console as well as an old console.
Yeah. I don't think one could have existed without... I mean, I don't think that Horizon would exist without Zelda.
Oh, no, absolutely. No, God, of course.
Yeah.
But, I mean, that's a given. But it's more kind of like, what's... You know, what are you going for?
Like, yeah, but it's interesting because under the hood, like, they do have a lot of similarities. You know, they're leaning into crafting and more RPG elements that Zelda really hasn't gotten into in its series. It is this sort of free-range, giant open world where you get into these scenarios with the flora and fauna that's sort of dynamic. You've seen shots of Alloy running away from like a beast chasing her, and then other shots of Link running away from monster with bows and arrows in their hands.
Both beautiful feminine protagonists. I don't know. I think that like visually it's going to be jarring to jump between the two.
Yeah.
Right. Because one of them's running at 900p and one of them's going to be running in 4K on my PS4 Pro. And that's going to be hard to like go back and forth on. But one of them, like, I can take on the go with me, which is a very different scenario. I'm hoping I can, like, I don't want to do a disservice to this thing, though, because I want to play, I'm going to play through Horizon, but I feel like I'm going to, like, I don't know, 95 or 100% Zelda.
Yeah, that's, I mean, for me, it's easy that I'm going to start with Horizon, and I'm going to beat the story. I mean, that's the one, like, with the exception of Skyward Sword, every Zelda for the last decade, I 100%ed.
Yeah,
so, like, I know I'm going to do that. I'm going to take my time with Breath of the Wild. I would rather jump into Horizon, let it impress me. You know, I'll spend as long with it as I need to.
What sucks is that both of these games got delayed so many times that this is where they landed. Yeah. Like, after all of that.
Hey, thank God Persona's not coming out. Yeah, I mean, I think Horizon looks incredible, and I'm so excited for it. And I'm kind of on blackout at this point. Like, I'm trying to just find out as little as possible and go in as blind as I can.
Yeah, because we haven't had like a meaty single player preview event.
I feel like we know very little about Horizon ultimately. I mean, we've seen a couple really long demos and they've set out the world really well, like overall, but like, I don't know. It's kind of like when we went into Force Awakens and the opening scroll started and it said, Luke Skywalker has vanished.
Yep.
And it was like that moment where we're all like, oh, like, I have no idea what this movie's about.
Yep,
like, I want that feeling from Horizon. I want to turn it on and have a totally bizarre cold open that I had no idea was coming.
I'm so excited about just the fact that it is a fresh start. It's a new IP.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. You know, there's not going to be like callbacks to things that maybe I wasn't around for or whatever.
Yep. Yeah.
It's yeah, I'm kind of curious. I feel like I've almost gotten sick of seeing it based on what we've seen so much, because it has been kind of like teased for so long.
And so much of what we've seen has been sort of the same thing.
Right.
And yeah. We know that there's a whole mess of different environments right. in the game.
Yeah. I'm also really curious because this is Guerrilla's first open world game properly. Yeah. Like they kind of dabbled with that with Killzone Shadowfall.
Yeah.
Where they were like, I remember playing that at E3 before, you know, the PS4 came out and being like, oh, wow, so these are open worlds. Like, this these are
really
large,
big combat arenas.
I think this is a good opportunity to sort of highlight the fact that I, as optimistic as I am for both of these games, I do have my doubts about both of them in their own ways. Just move the boxes.
I'm moving the boxes right now. I'm
teenager.
Sorry.
Yeah, I mean, my thing is, I'm trying to stay fairly blind as much as I can with my job. But, Marty, when you and I saw this BCD at E3 2015, mm-hmm. they played up a lot of those open world aspects and what a kind of more traditional RPG it was than we might think. And at the time, they were teasing towns and all kinds of things that made me excited. I don't know. I don't think we've seen much of that yet.
No, like the last media drop they did was a story trailer, and we got to look at some of the actors. Lance Reddick from The Wire and Lost mm-hmm. Plays a character in the game.
In Horizon?
In Horizon, yeah.
Awesome.
Yeah,
I love
put
Lance
same
Reddick.
Character as Lost, the
really?
The sergeant.
Like
yeah.
the, just
the cop.
Disenfranchised.
Which is also weirdly his character from The Wire also.
Yeah. Just a cop. Oh, that's why. That's what I meant. He's a magical man in Lost.
Yeah. But same with, I mean, Skyward Sword's probably my least favorite Zelda game. And there was a lot of stuff about that game that just actively annoyed me.
Yeah.
And this one's been kicking around for a while. I don't really know how it's going to pan out. Visually, I'm kind of cool with it. It's just a little bland at times. Like, I think that the...
So.
Zelda?
Yeah.
I don't think so at all.
No. What?
I don't think
no.
it, like, I think
oh,
the
man.
The art style is just not incredibly great when it comes to the actual landscape.
What?
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah,
man.
I think the main character and the enemies and all that stuff looks awesome, but the actual horizon.
Ooh, man. Like, when they showed, there's, like, some really cool, like, snowy vistas, and he, like, snowboards down. They did that for their stupid holiday video or whatever. Yeah. But even, like, that trailer from the other night, like, when we see, like, the big lake, and we see, like, the desert, and we
see. That stuff is gorgeous.
Like, I do think that there's enough environmental diversity we've seen already where I'm like, oh, I'm totally.
It's definitely gotten better. But yeah, the reality is I want to play both of these games.
Also, it's a bad problem to have. It's like someone being like, hey, we're taking you out to two really nice meals two nights in a row.
Yeah, it's Betty and Veronica.
Yeah.
I mean, it's a good problem to have is two huge, wonderful, fantastical games coming out close together. You know,
what's going on with these girls?
Betty and Veronica
from Archie.
Yeah?
You know, tune in for CW's Riverdale premiere.
You know what's the problem with them?
It'd be really weird if...
What do you mean? Do you know anything about Archie?
Oh, man.
Archie's this redhead kid in high school, and
God's
he's trying
sake.
To hook up with two girls
I was trying to be like a really
time.
Neat, like, outro
blonde,
to that
one of
bit.
One brunette.
You know?
The blonde girl's down to earth, and she's real cool and sweet.
Anyway.
Kind of like a country farm girl, but the brunette girl's rich as hell, so she's got crazy money. Brunette girl's a little bit hotter, but she's a huge pain in the ass.
Anyway,
she's, like, feisty as hell.
Yeah,
but the blonde girl is really sweet and down to earth. She's just kind of ditzy.
Also, my favorite thing about this,
them.
I've heard him do this rant before because there are these two waitresses. I touched your thumbs.
Anyway.
There are these two waitresses and we're in Amsterdam.
Will you please stop? Will you just stop? Just give me a second. Anyway, Horizon Zero Dawn and Zelda Breath of the Wild are coming out 3 days apart. Which one are you going to play? You can let us know in the comments below or head over to the Podcast Beyond Facebook group. That's facebook.com/group/podcastbeyond. There, talk about Archie again.
Thanks, Jughead.
Wait, is Archie like trying to date them or is he just friends with them?
Oh, he's definitely trying to date them.
That's
he's trying to
the drama.
Them. He's trying to do them both. I'll be real with you.
I think he's trying to do that old Mr. Weatherby.
You think
ice,
so?
Ice malt stand.
Milkshakes for one?
No, I don't
Why
care.
Do I know so little about Archie?
How do you? What comics did you ask your parents to buy you when you were going out of the grocery store?
Archie's like the Doctor Who of comics. Either you know about
it
or you
I don't. Okay, yeah.
Okay. Anyway, speaking of Archie and Jughead, God of War. That's a game that's coming out that has nothing to do with any of the above. So for the love of God, let's talk about it.
Of War.
Yeah, I get it. Anyway, so this is Kratos in this game, yeah?
Yeah.
Like
Kratos.
Now
we know
he was old man Kratos, and we saw he got a beard.
He got a beard and a boy.
He got a boy, and we didn't know what his son's name was at E3.
It's Atreus.
And we now learn it's pretty much Atreus.
Yeah. Atreus.
Atreus.
So in Greek mythology, Atreus, it's a bunch of crap in Greek I can't read, was a king of Mycenae in Peloponnese, the son of Pelops and Hippodamia, the father of Agamemnon and Melanias. Collectively, his descendants are known as Atreidae or Atreidae.
I mean, I do find it interesting how they take Greek mythology
Who put this in the
and
notes?
They take Greek mythology and they kind of blur the lines a little bit. I like that Kratos is sort of this weird character that interacts with all the major Greek gods, but not like by the book in the way you might expect.
And angry Forrest Gump.
I don't think, like, I think this name is interesting, but I don't think it necessarily tells us much. I still don't think we know who his mother is. I think there's going to be a lot of weird twists to this.
It says the son of Michael Phelps and Hippodippus Samia.
Just thinking about angry Forrest Gump.
Yeah.
What?
Yeah.
I was warring.
I gotta find my city.
I got stabbed in the buttock by a hippogriff.
It's from Harry Potter.
Yeah, that's also a thing that flubs the lines. Oh, sorcerers, philosophers, we don't know the difference. Anyway, I'm really excited about this game.
I
historically hate Gears of God of War.
Oh, and Gears of War.
People are going to get mad at me. Anyway, they both involve angry dudes with way too big necks who have tribal tattoos, so what do you want?
And it's about a father-son relationship, just like Gears of War 4 was.
Yeah. They're both very dirty, too. They never wash themselves.
Everyone's dirty
actually,
and angry.
Yeah, there are a lot of similarities. Yeah. They also have like a they have beards now, and they come out of the shadows.
Yeah, they come out of the shadows.
I don't know, I like that hut he lives in.
But yeah, this was one of those, you know, the surprises at E3. Like, the demo was super great. There was a preview floating around that was really good. But no, this is one of those games
Marty
that,
wrote
we love.
Stupid preview that, like, three people came up to him and said he liked, and it went to his head so much.
He's got, doesn't have a whole lot else going on, though.
I went to Japan.
What does that mean?
We can't talk about that, okay? We can talk about it.
All right.
We'll talk about that next week. Okay. But no, that's one of those, like, God of War is one of those games we loved coming out of E3, and then they just have been, like, pretty much radio silence for the last 6 months.
Good. Yeah. We need more of that. Yeah. I love the idea of something being put, like, in our brains that we can, you know, hypothesize and talk about it and everything.
What about a 45-minute long making of documentary of all the rocks in that trailer? Let's put that out. There's like, I hate that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
I'm so glad with them being radio silence.
I thought it was kind of crass that, like, that Guerrilla put out, like, this cosplay guide for the character from Horizon. Right.
Why?
I don't know. It was just like, we don't know who that is yet. And I know that obviously cosplayers are going to like jump on stuff ahead of time, and that's cool. Cosplay is cool. But
yeah,
when the studio is kind of being like, here you go, it almost feels like, oh, you're giving out shirts with your company logo on it because that's free advertising.
I get that. To me, I think it's a fine line. I think that when like representation in games is evolving, and I think when there are more and more characters of, you know, different skin tones, different body types, like different genders, I think it's important for those cosplay guides to go out, because if someone sees a trailer and is like, oh, that looks like me, and you know, the big neck dude in the 30 games I saw trailers for before this didn't, I think it's cool that they put that out. But I agree with you that it's like, before you know that, I mean, it's kind of like pre-ordering a $300 collector's edition of a game you haven't played yet.
Sure, right.
I mean, like, and you have this weird, like, you kind of put all your eggs in that basket if you decide to latch onto that.
You legally can't bring it up, but like Borderlands and Gearbox always did a good job of, especially with, you know, like Borderlands 2 and the League and the Tales from the Borderlands of doing that. And like, that's why cosplayers have flocked so heavily to that series.
I thought that studio got so much better once Andrew Goldfarb left.
Full disclosure, I worked for Gearbox.
Okay,
for
you don't have to
months.
Do stop it.
Just I do. I do have to do that.
You wait, do that every time?
It got so much better with
when he left.
Battleborn.
I heard you used to have to give Randy Pitchford piggyback rides around.
Oh
yeah,
we flew drones on the roof once.
What?
I don't know if that's violating an NDA.
All right. I worked in Walden Books. All right. That's weird. Anyway,
is that where my Aliens Colonial Marines money went? Small planes.
Yeah, I guess I'm almost bitter. I'm almost bitter at the fact that they're putting out, like, you know, pre-release assets for stuff like that, because I remember going on IGN over the summer of 2001 and like rooting through Metal Gear screenshots trying to find like a full body photo of Snake so I could draw realistic photos of Snake, and that came out really weird. I feel like full body Snake. Let me see his ass. But no, like, I was trying to find, like, you know, reference images, and at that point it was just screen grabs from like a 480p QuickTime file to put up E3, and then there'd be like the McFarlane toy that like maybe was sort of off model.
Yep,
but
yep.
The fact that they're like, hey, you want to know what the front and back of this character looks like and what all the detailed props look like? So you
I think
a cool
that's
costume.
Awesome. Like, I cosplayed or dressed up as Gene Wilder as Willy Wonka for Halloween, and like finding really good full body shots of like the pants and the shoes, and it's not a lot of detail. It was hard to get. So I think if they could just put that stuff out and make
it's really
it
weird to
forever.
Find full body shots of the shoes because they only cover a small portion.
Everyone
of
stop true. Saying full body shots. It just makes me seem like
full body
party.
Shots. Yeah. Everybody meet me at Senor Frogs. Me and Tara Reid are going to be at the bar. Anyway, speaking of body shots, Mass Effect Andromeda is on the way, and it's going to have sex in it. I don't even know what I'm reading here. There's a quote here.
So the first part is from E3. The second part is a soon follow-up. You said, I didn't know what I'm reading here.
I was going to read it anyway, like I do with everything. In the past, we've been very, they're Canadian. I'd say somewhat formulaic in the way we presented them.
Can you do me a fit? Can you read that much sexier?
In the past, we've been very, formulaic in the way we presented them. We're trying to look at more organic ways to have those relationships evolve.
BioWare creative director Mac Walters told IGN in an interview at last year's E3.
Aaron Flynn talked on stage today about offering more freedom to players than ever before. And that includes areas like this as well. How you engage in those types of relationships and the gating around them throughout the timeline of the story. And then meanwhile, Michael Gamble, producer of the game on Twitter, said...
This week?
The banging is pretty good.
But did you see...
A talking hammer said, pow, right in the kisser.
Wait, what happened?
On Twitter, when he said that, that was in response to... Steimer, yeah. Former IGN editor.
Your sexy voice is like George W. Bush having phone sex.
I heard you got some aluminum tubes over there. What if I crawled inside one of those tubes?
Does he end it with mission accomplished?
I heard you got a couple of crawlies up in your crick.
I unzipped my flight suit on the deck of a battlefield aircraft carrier.
Yeah, that's a weird quote. The banging is pretty good.
I like that they're having a sense of humor about this.
Yeah.
Mass Effect is such a just a weird series, and that everyone kind of plays it for a different reason. Some people like it because it's a hugely fleshed out universe. Mm-hmm. Some people like it because when it's fleshed out, they're also talking about butt cheeks.
Ooh,
which fleshed is out butt cheeks. Fleshy, nice fleshy universe.
We just said fleshed out butt cheeks and full body snakes in the last five minutes.
And it's like Mass Effect 1 barely has these.
So that's the thing. I'm playing through Mass Effect 1 with Alana in the Let's Play series, and I feel like we're like halfway through, and I haven't bunged anybody yet?
I mean, in Mass Effect 1, you have like a very small pool of choices, basically. And I think by 3, they got a lot better at, you had kind of minor relationships and major relationships, and they kind of interweaved.
I don't want a relationship with a minor.
You could do like a pull-up contest with Freddie Prinze Jr. and then kiss him on the leg.
Yeah, what? That's exactly right, yeah.
Is that real?
Yep.
I mean, spoilers.
I mean, not exactly, but yeah.
They're just like, great news, everybody. Freddie Prinze Jr. is in this new game, and he's muscular as hell.
You haven't done that yet?
He's not in one.
He's in 3, yeah.
I'm very slowly making my way.
You're never going to finish even one, let alone 3.
Well, when you get there, look up the IGN wiki guide for how to sex the prince.
I do think in all seriousness, like, this is a good sign that they're thinking about relationships and stuff. Like, we're obviously meeting all new characters. There's no carryovers from the trilogy. So at this point, like, they do have a fresh slate. So it's going to be whoever you like, you could pursue. Like, I think that's smart.
So you played a ton of Witcher. How did Witcher deal with sort of romance options? Like, did it deal with maturely? Was it silly?
Maturely in the way that Europeans are more mature about sex, and that they're like, yeah, we're all here because of it. So there was kind of like, it was kind of silly. Mm-hmm. I don't know. It was very like, apparently they shot like 120 hours of sexy mocap for that game. Like, they did like stupid amounts of fake banging with ping pong ball suits on to make a believable world of
I read a tweet that all of it was real.
Yeah,
probably. It was like that Hayden Christensen film.
Yeah. Anyway,
Attack of the Clones.
I don't know. I think that no matter what you're looking at, there has not been a
shattered glass.
No, the one with Sienna Miller. Him and Sienna Miller had actual intercourse in a film.
I didn't know that.
That's a really...
Wait, in Star Wars, Attack of the Clones?
Stop it!
On that field? When they were rolling?
The sand was hard?
Oh, God.
It gets everywhere.
Don't do it at the beach. Anyway, so, I think Witcher did it probably better than Mass Effect did. Mm-hmm. Yes. But, I mean, Mass Effect also came out, you know, years before.
Yeah.
All of this is like stick figures humping. In 30 years, we're going to look back on this, I mean, assuming that we're not just, you know, nuked to a pile of smoldering rubble, and be like, it's like those old 50s movies where, like, you know, Cary Grant goes, well, darling, I'll be in the top bunk. And then it shows the train going into a tunnel, and you're like, I think I understand what they're alluding to. But
Max, what you're missing is that in 30 years, you're going to be in your 60s, and the average person who's really excited for Mass Effect sex is going to be 38.
What?
What?
He's saying that right now they're 8.
Yeah, you're only one in the room capable of simple math. Thank you very much.
Okay.
So glad we're here.
That's why he works at Gearbox Entertainment. Anyway.
Home of the math.
No, I don't know. I think I'll totally jump in Mass Effect Andromeda. Like, I play those games like pretty tongue-in-cheek in more ways than one. Partially making fun of it, partially because I'm trying to do sex.
Tunnelingus. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Or weird deep kissing. But yeah, no, like, I'm glad that they're like, the producer can poke fun at themselves, you know.
When's this game out?
Soon?
March 21st.
Yeah. No one believes that, though.
I'm still going to be in Horizon and Zelda. That. Unless this game gets... I hate being like this, but unless this game gets absolutely phenomenal reviews, I'm probably going to skip it. just not really interested in it. Compared
I would
to
be very disappointed if this game did not get absolutely phenomenal reviews.
Well,
there's only one thing I want to do in space is drive a six-wheeled truck and have sex with a blue lady.
It is crazy that this comes out 2 weeks before Persona. So there's going to be
2 weeks after Zelda and 3 days after Horizon. Yeah,
like that Q1 is insane. And that's not even counting like Resident Evil and all the things coming out now.
Yeah. 2017 is shaping up to be a pretty good year for games, which is what we said about last year. Look where that got us.
It was delayed into this year.
Yeah. Anyway,
there are crazy people that say last year was amazing.
It was amazing.
Yeah, last year
it was pretty good.
Says the guy who got 5 minutes in the Final Fantasy got too scared to keep playing.
I got 4 hours into Final Fantasy.
And you're too scared to keep playing.
I'm not too scared. I'm just not having the best time of my life.
That's
I'm
because,
still going.
That's because you got your fingers over your eyes because you're scared of what's going to happen to Knuckles.
Why would I be afraid of anything in that garage video game?
That game is not garish.
Garish.
It's garage. That game is very pretty.
Yeah.
It's also you can be pretty and garish.
Although Garrus is a character in Mass Effect.
Great job. Why did they let us do this show still? Anyway, so last week we talked about collector's editions that don't come with games, so how are they still collector's editions?
Yeah.
And it's kind of a weird thing. We got an email from Chris Kriesel, who said, "Hello, Beyond Gang. I've heard you all complaining about the collector's editions that more specifically EA put out. I work at a GameStop, and I have slight insight to why this is an item they pursue now. As you all know, they stopped putting games in them, but it isn't necessarily for more money, though I'm sure it helps. It is actually a little more sensible on the retail side. There are two physical versions of Mass Effect on Xbox One and PlayStation 4, meaning four SKUs. There are at least 4 digital SKUs for those as well. Many times stores will get X amount of each collector's edition, typically thanks to reservations of the items. However, with many, a walk-in customer will get will want the standard edition of the Xbox One game with the collector's content, but the store only has excess PlayStation collectors. With a new EA mentality, someone can walk in and buy the edition they want, be it deluxe or not, digital or not, and also get the collector's content. This also helps collectors that only want content but don't want the game. I actually do deal with these individuals regularly. This helps the sellers, retail publisher, etc., clear stock before they all go clearance and lose money on the sales instead, and helps customers not have to hunt so hard for what they want and for those they want to attempt to save and don't have to spend as much on a required deluxe with their bonus physical content. Sorry for the rant, just thought it'd be good for everyone to hear on the other side. There are some weird exceptions like ReCore, no separate SKUs, only on Xbox One, yet game not collectors. Really? Thanks for everything you guys do. This is wonderful insight to have.
Yeah.
Makes that's a really ton of sense.
And I think even aside from this, even the ReCore example he gave, like, I prefer to buy games digitally, period. I would always rather have it on my system than get up and swap discs. And so truthfully, like, if I liked a game enough that I wanted a statue, I would almost always rather buy it without the game or have the game come with a code.
Yeah, this almost like listening to him say this reminds me, it's almost like going to a grocery store and they don't sell packaged steak dinners of a steak and 2 Yukon potatoes and a side of carrots. It's like, no, you can buy the steak and you can get whatever potatoes you want and you can get whatever veggies you want and like just you have the meal you want. So if you want the super crazy collector's edition but you want a downloadable version of the PS4 thing, you can have that.
So I
it's weird
it
that you
sense.
Put it in that sense because they're still bundles. Like they're not just like a collectible item. They're still called a collector's edition because I feel like there's this mentality in gamers to go after like, here is the higher tier version. Here is the final evolution of this game. It is the big version. Even if it doesn't come with the game, it's still like it's a known quantity. It comes with like a cloth map. It comes with a keychain. It comes with a flash drive, all that crap. But it's weird because I'm really big into collectibles. You too, Brian. Like we collect a ton of toys. It's really bizarre because they're still going through the companies that physically manufacture collector's editions that come with the game or otherwise. I think 3-0 is one of them. It's really strange because there are companies that could go to like collectible companies and have considerably higher end like products.
Yeah.
But they don't. They still go, like, we still get these things that are of the quality of, like, of pack-in items.
Yeah, I was going to say, ironically, if you really love collectibles, one of the worst things you can buy is a video game collector's edition. Because they're almost always shoddy and cheap.
I mean, it depends. Like, the 15 Crazy Ultimate Collector's Edition has an actual PlayArts Kai Noctis in it. Like, it has, like, legit.
That's one of the rare exceptions. Yeah. Yeah. Square Enix is really good about it because they do have a separate line of action figures, which is PlayArts Kai.
But it's usually Nathan Drake with, like, his second eye is, like, up here.
Yeah.
I mean, the thing for me is, like,
that wonderful Max Payne 3 one that if you leave it in the sun just gradually leans, which is kind
so
of
does
actually,
Max.
It's canonical.
For which one?
For Max Payne 3, they had those ones where he's just walking with bullets, but he just tilts over slowly.
No, I had to get rid of my Nathan Drake one for Uncharted 3 because he just wouldn't stand.
He doesn't stay in the stand. Yeah. I mean, it's weird because we were talking about Switch earlier. Like, I pre-ordered a Switch and the Master's Edition of Zelda, but then I also bought a 256 gig SD card to have in the slot because I want digital games.
Right.
It's impossible for me to get the Zelda statue and coin and all that crap. And
piecemeal,
digital copy of the game.
Yeah.
So it's like
unless
really
you go through eBay, which is like going to triple your cost.
Yeah. Right.
But
exactly.
Then, and then I saw on the Switch stream that the Master Sword is just completely bent backwards.
Well,
it's just like flimsy.
That's the thing is Nintendo is they're historically a toy company, and they're also known for making stuff for kids. They're not going to make a realistic sword replica because, first of all, there are weird shipping regulations and stuff like that. But also, they're not going to be like, oh, you can stab your brother in the eye and kill him.
Yeah.
Hell no, we're not going to get that lawsuit. Like, right. We're going to make, like, the flimsiest sword possible.
Yeah, but your brother's a dick.
Yeah, and yeah. You could totally use a Wii U stylus to yeah. Stab your brother in the eye. Yeah,
that's true. You could, I mean, you could stab him with one of the yeah. brand no, I mean, new I, joysticks.
I feel like stab him, he's going to get stabbed.
I feel like we've said this a lot, but, like, if you really love, like,
video
you
really want to kill your brother.
You really want to kill your brother.
You'll figure a way.
Watch the movie The Good Son. The video game collector's editions are always like kind of shoddy, but if you look around, you can find mm-hmm. really good tie-ins that they made. Like basic, usually in Japan, they'll make like marketing deals or you know sort of consumer grade deals of toys, figures, statues that are much cooler. Will cost you a little bit more money. You'll probably have to get them shipped. But like if you're gonna put something in your room that's like 2 feet tall and it's for Horizon, like get something really nice. You know, make it look really good. Like yeah. Put a little more money in.
What's really strange is the companies or the publishers that don't do collectibles. Really, 2K is really good about it. Like there are most 2K licenses have been given to NECA, which makes really awesome high-end action figures. I think Blizzard also makes some through that. I believe Valve does too. Whereas like Sony doesn't really like you can't get a Bloodborne action figure. You can get this,
I was just thinking about that.
You can get this Bloodborne statue and then you can get an accessory kit for the statue so you can swap out his weapons. Yep. But it's still an action figure, which
but
is
if they
really
had,
weird
like
to
a
make.
Big action figure line of a bunch of different looking like hunters and like
yeah.
That'd be
well,
awesome.
And that's the thing. Like I mean, just a high end Max and I's yeah. desk is covered with toys, but if you walk by, you'd be like, those guys aren't PlayStation fans because I don't really have a ton of like they make some plushies. Like there's like a Parappa the Rapper McDonald's toy.
And then they make
like,
Funko Pops.
And right. they make Funko yeah. Pops, but you don't really get a lot of like yeah. I mean, I have like super customizable, I forget which company makes them, those Super Mario figures. Mm-hmm. They're awesome. They're adorable. But no one really makes anything like that for like Sackboy or Nathan Drake.
Oh, actually, no. Like so NECA did get the license for.
I did see the NECA Nathan Drake. Or was right. it, yeah, yeah.
Figma's for the Mario. But yeah. NECA did finally get Nathan Drake and Sackboy, but there's still no like Bloodborne. There's no Killzone. Yeah. There's nothing like yeah. that. What's really weird is like is Destiny, which you can either go really big or go home. Mm-hmm. Like you can get these. I think it's 3/8 as these 1/6 scale action figures of different classes and different color schemes. And they're like $235.
Yeah.
Or you can get Mega Bloks, which are available at Kmart and they look like they look like ass. Yeah. And, but there's no like, oh, here's a $15 action figure of, you know, a garden.
Right.
And it sucks that there's nothing in the middle there.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I don't know. Collector's editions. Not wild about them myself, but I hope to see more of a kind of a overlap between video games and collectibles.
Totally. Yeah, I think plush toys tend to work really well. Like at PSX, they had in display the one that's coming with Persona 5. It looked really good for mm-hmm. considering how cheap that thing is. Like
they sent an actual cat with the special editions of The Last Guardian.
Yeah, it's a shame.
It didn't listen to what its owner did.
Goldie, you've tweeted out pictures of your desk multiple times. You've got like 50 plush toys on there now.
Probably less than that.
Sensitive boy. Okay. A little stuffed animal parade over there.
All right. That gets a little weird about it.
You don't have to feel weird. They have the worst desk.
Why don't you get some Rubber Man's
you
toys?
Have the worst desk.
Like the guy with the great. Guns.
Your desk looks like you just got divorced.
She'll take me back.
Brian and I have one of those sharks that you put in water and it gets larger because it's
huge now.
Sponge.
It's real fat in the head.
We put it in a vase.
You're both really fat in the head.
Anyway, that's fun to talk about. I like talking about that kind of stuff. Okay, time for Rapid Fire. Rapid Fire is, of course, the thing where we go on the Facebook group, which is facebook.com/group/podcastbeyond. You should be a member there. If you're not already, what's wrong with you? Get to your head.
Groups.com?
Yeah. Groups.com/plentyfish.net.
We said that as like a typo once. I've just been running with it.
Real weird.
Groups.com.
Anyway.
Nothing good.
Josiah Beiler says, what do you think about the Switch in relation to the Vita?
I put up an interview with EA that kind of got into this today towards the end. I think in the extremely unlikely scenario where the Switch is like Wii levels of popular, you could see a resurgence in dedicated handhelds. Yeah. I don't think that's the likely outcome of this. I'm not even saying Switch won't do well, but I think the amount to which it would have to be a game changer to really get people out of the smartphone universe into dedicated handheld land would be crazy.
I think the most important factor here is the sort of the amount of games that people buy for it.
Yes.
If you look at the what do they call that? It's not a, what's there's a
Leapfrog.
Name. There's a name for how many, boom, somebody buys a ton of games.
Attach rate.
Attach rate. That's what it is. I'm Leapfrog.
That's what I'm here for.
Leapfrog. Totally threw me off.
Transferring.
The attach rates on the Vita were phenomenal.
Yeah.
People would buy a Vita and they'd buy dozens and dozens of games. We saw the same thing happen with PSVR. If that happens with the Switch, I think it's a good example where I think a lot of companies like Atlas and smaller studios and stuff like that might be taking their games and bringing them over there. It's not, we're not really in a position where someone would be like, well, we were going to make this game for Vita, but we should make it for Switch instead.
Well, and I think that's, well, but now we might be, and that's why it's weird. Like, Vita obviously has its own problems, but Vita, after a certain point, 3DS and Vita are not sharing a market. There are so few games that come to both. It's like the Zero Escape series and maybe a couple of others. But I think you get to this point now where if you're NIS or you're Atlas, you are faced with that. Should I bring it to Switch or Vita?
Right.
And I think that creates competition, which is only going to help. I think at that point, like, this probably will be good for handheld gaming, but we just don't know yet. It just depends on how many people make games for Switch.
I'm trying to, like, if I had to guess that, I mean, I'm going to get a Switch. I'll probably get one in the fall when Mario comes out, because I'll play Zelda on Wii U. If I had to guess, by the end of the Switch's lifespan, I will probably have triple, if not quadruple, the amount of games on my Vita than I will on my Switch, just because, like, I fill my Vita up with stuff like Sound Shapes and Guacamelee and Shovel Knight on there, and then PS1 classics are always on sale for super cheap. And so I have Symphony of the Night and Resident Evil and all the Final
Fantasy.
You've
also got PlayStation Plus, which is giving you free games every single month.
There's also cross-buy.
Yeah.
I mean, this is kind of, the Switch is kind of doing what
it's built.
It's not even comparative, but like what PS4 had to do after PS3, where it's like, here's an architecture that's not compatible. Like, we're trying to hopefully kind of
building from the ground up. But in terms of what this means for, like, the sort of the legacy of the Vita, or if we'll ever see a Vita 2, I hope so. It remains to be seen. I think that I'd be shocked if Sony ever took a bet on a portable handheld. I mean,
especially
again,
because you know, in Japan, mobile is just king.
Yeah.
Like, so far and away, you know, mobile gaming is so much bigger than console and handheld gaming.
But
so,
I like that before the Switch, like, before we actually knew for a fact that this is what the NX was, that this is, like, the model they were going after, this wouldn't have even been a conversation. Like, handheld gaming was dead, period.
Yeah.
And now it's handheld gaming is dead, ?
Yeah,
like,
okay,
I do feel like at least the conversation's open again.
Yeah. So the question was, of course, what do you think about the Switch in relation to the Vita? I don't. I think they're entirely different animals in spite of the obvious similarities. Like, the fact is that I think most people are going to use the Switch as a console.
Like, I'm not. I'm not even going to plug in the HDMI port. Like, to me, that is Nintendo's next portable system.
Okay, well, you proved me wrong, Andrew Goldfarb.
Well, I
foiled
really
my
like,
plans yet again.
I like portable gaming, and I think ultimately the reason I'm excited for it is to have these games in the go, not necessarily to have.
I'm not saying people won't use it, but I think that most people will. I think that the fact that you can play Zelda on a big screen, I think it's designed to be a console game.
I think it's fascinating that Sony almost had this exact concept had they just made it a little bit easier to connect your Vita to your TV with any regularity. I think that it is fairly simple, and I think there's ways around it. There's way to do it through PSTV and other means. But I think a lot of people had no idea that was even a thing and didn't bother with it, and a lot of devs didn't really say, like, oh, try your Vita game on your TV.
I wonder if there was ever a point where those timelines could have, like, if Vita had been 1 year later or PS4 had been 1 year earlier, they would have intersected just enough.
We
were talking about that at the launch of the PS4.
I mean, Mark Cerny designed the PS4 and the Vita. Like, it's really strange that they don't play well together.
Yeah.
And the fact
like, remote play is good, but it's not the extent of, I mean, there are games that let you transfer saves and make it fairly easy,
you're a button short, and it's the button that you use most. The fact that you've got to use the back touch screen to do, you know, R2 and L2, like, that sucks.
Yeah.
Also, like, I mean, I have a first gen, like a fat Vita, and, like, you can plug it in with the cord, right? And do remote play like that, can't you? Do you know?
I've never done corded remote.
Yeah, I haven't either.
Okay, I don't know if you can. But, I mean, I'm thinking if they just had a cord that came out and it was like, oh, it's plugged in, the TV's free for use, so whoever's in the...
Yeah.
Because they've done the whole Wii U approach.
That would have been great.
That seemed like a no-brainer, but apparently it just didn't work that way.
Yeah, just having some sort of, like, video out thing. And I think it only works over wireless, so I don't know.
I mean,
like, two ships passing in the night on that one.
I'm fascinated to see how Switch affects... Because I still play Vita more than almost anything.
Yeah.
By virtue of traveling, but also I just enjoy it. And so I'm curious to see if Switch kind of how much of a chunk of it takes away. Like, I'm still going to play my Splunky daily challenges and stuff, I think, but I don't know. I'll just be curious. I'm also, like, indies are a huge difference. Like, Vita became my indie machine after a certain point, and Nintendo did a really good job with, like, nindies and all that stuff towards the end of Wii U's life. But I don't know how much of that'll come over. We know Shovel Knight's coming. We know Fast Racing Neo is coming. Like, they have a few, but we're missing a lot of their big partners.
I agree, especially if they're going to lean into it as a handheld gaming device. And I'm a lot like you in that I will probably mostly use this thing in handheld mode, because especially hooking it up to my TV and being like, oh, this doesn't look that great. I'll play PS4 games on my Pro. Whereas on the Switch or on the Vita, I actually lay on my couch and my 3DS play handhelds right there. Like, it's just nice. It's comfortable. So I hope handheld gaming never goes away. away. It's a reason. One of the reasons I'm even here is because of handheld gaming. Like, I got in an IGN reading guides for Link's Awakening for the Game Boy when I was a kid.
Yeah. Well, and I'm playing, like, I've been playing Mario Run.
Yeah.
And, like, I've now maxed out everything in Mario Run. But, like, every once in a blue moon, I'll get a text message in the middle of a crazy jump, and it'll screw me up, and I'll start the level over.
I hate that.
And it's like, that alone will keep me from ever wanting to play a
dedicated gaming device.
I love dedicated devices because they're not, like, that's what I love about VR, is that I don't get distracted by other stuff. I'm just, I put on this hat and I go someplace else.
Yeah, there's no pop-ups or anything like that. Like,
I get people messaging me when I'm, like, in the middle of a cutscene, even on PS4, and I'm like, don't do that.
Yeah.
Leave me alone. Yep. Or something updated, or my controller died. Justin the Smith says, what is your most memorable fan meeting? I'll jump on this right now. PAX East, I think 2012. I was very, very ill. I was very sick. And I showed up the first day. And this kid ran up to me, and he gave me a copy of Hotel for Dogs on Blu-ray. I don't know who that was, so maybe it wasn't that memorable, but that was a very weird thing to have happen when I was high on cold medicine and probably had a fever.
Also, only like a 75% chance that actually happened.
No, it happened. I watched that movie. There's a part where they make a conveyor belt for all the dog's feces.
There was a very, very young kid, probably 8 or 9 or 10, who came to the Up at Noon studio a couple years ago, right after I finished hosting the show with Greg. And he came up to me afterwards, and he was like, Brian, I really love your album, Misanthrope. And he handed me a Super Nintendo cartridge that had Mario Paint on it. And he said, I made your album cover in Mario Paint. And it was one of the most adorable things. I actually started crying. Like, it just completely got me. It was just a bullet to the heart. It was beautiful. But yeah, really, really, really sweet. Like, we actually found a Super Nintendo. We used a Retron, I believe, and hooked it up in the office. And I was able to pull it up. And I was like, that's my album cover that a kid made in Mario Paint. Like,
that's so cool.
Adorable.
We had a
better than what you made in Mario Paint.
Yeah.
I thought you were going to say he remixed the whole thing with those cat and dog noises.
If only.
I don't think I told that story on the show.
Ryan, what did you make in Mario Paint?
When I was young and Mario Paint came out, I animated the Rodney King trial in Mario Paint.
Yikes.
Why?
It's so bad.
Why is it bad? The trial is bad. Recreating it in art.
Mario Paint?
I was a kid. I didn't know what to do.
Anything else?
I don't, whatever. You draw stuff weird when you're a young boy.
Andrew.
Hey. Two real quick. We had fairly recently, we had like a little 8-year-old kid in the office who
was
incredible. He was just so excited. He was like shaking and so happy to be here. That was awesome. You met him.
Oh, right? Yeah. That was incredible.
And then one weird one was at, I think it was PAX Prime. We had a live show 2 years ago at the YouTube booth, and you texted me and you were like, hey, there's a guy here who says he went to elementary school with you.
Yeah.
And there was a guy I went to elementary school with who was at the YouTube booth.
Now you're the best man at his wedding.
And then he swirled you in the toilet. Like good old days.
I mean, like it's cheesy, but like any meetup we have at like any PSX or PAX is incredible. But over, we'll talk about more next week. I was in Japan over the weekend and I was walking around by myself in Shibuya, and Henry, shout out to Henry, who's probably listening to this, stopped me in the middle of wandering through an alley in Shibuya.
What?
He was like, Marty? I was like, yeah.
That's so
weird.
Oh,
I listen to Beyond. He's been living there for the last 6 months.
It's really weird.
Yeah.
I had that happen with Mitch Dyer in Japan, and it was like, wait, what?
Yeah.
I met that guy again.
Yeah.
I also had that happen with Mitch on a separate occasion, also in Japan. Yeah. It's really strange.
We had that at
Can't Spell Gaijin without IGN.
So, IGN can't spell Gaijin. Keep it locked. I guess you can. No, we really, never mind.
No, you can.
That happened to Artney. Yeah. Same thing.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, that's weird.
Yaradonin said, do you have any New Year's gaming resolutions? Personally, I've decided to play less games, but try to invest more time into each.
Mm, that's a good one.
I really like that one.
Yeah, that's really good.
That's kind of a bad thing about our jobs, though, is to try to stay informed on everything. Like, Marty, we've been doing this Let's Play series called Welcome to Skyrim. Plug. It's on the YouTube channel on IGN. Go check it out. It's fun. We play Skyrim. The whole thing is you've never played Skyrim before.
Correct.
And every one of these videos, we're like, Marty's never played Skyrim. Isn't that weird? Let's play Skyrim. And people inevitably in the comments be like, this guy works at IGN and he's never played Skyrim.
The point of the show.
And I'm like,
point of the show.
I mean, I probably played an hour of Overwatch and that was our game of the year. Like, you can't play them all. Yeah. There are too many games that come out.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think that's a really good resolution. We talked about this on GameScoop, where there's a point in a video game where you can be like, I'm not having fun and I don't like this. And it's okay to leave it.
I have so much trouble with that. Yeah. I have so much trouble not finishing a game once I start it. Yeah. Because I have this like sad optimism where I'm like, oh, you'll see. It'll come around in the end. And
it's also at a certain point, if you're not liking something, you don't like it. It doesn't make you bad. It doesn't make the game bad. Like, Brian's not really feeling Final Fantasy 15. And at a certain point, it's like, well, just stop. Like, yeah. It's Max's game of the year.
I like a lot of it. Yeah. I just, you know, I'm playing because every now and then it's there's something wonderful happens. Yeah. I'm really into it.
But like, but, I don't know. Your free time is precious.
Yeah. I think that's a good resolution. I don't know if I have any personal ones. Probably, I feel like every year there's three or four games I buy flat out for $60 that I absolutely shouldn't have.
Yeah.
Last year I beat Uncharted 4, the office copy that we were kicking around. I finish it and I pass it to Max, I believe. And then I rebought it. Mm-hmm. And I was like, why? I wasn't totally like over the moon about it, and I'm probably not going to play it again, but I had it because I was like, I bought a PS4 Pro and I'm like, I want to get all the games that look really good on it, and it does, but I'm never going to replay that game.
Yeah.
I don't think, at least. So yeah, you make decisions like that every now and then. I did the same thing with Overwatch, where I bought it and I played it for 2.5 hours and I was like, oh, I totally see why people love this. This is not for me.
Yeah. It's especially tricky with digital stuff too.
Yeah.
Because you can't, it's not like you can give it to your friend. I wish you could just give away games digitally. Like, that'd be such a nice feature.
Yeah.
Well, if you could sort of like, if they had a thing that was like, oh, you know, you've only played this game for 90 minutes and you don't want it anymore, give it to somebody. That would be great. I would love that.
A couple years ago, I mean, I never play games on PC. Like, I don't have a PC. Occasionally, I'll play, like, Steam games on my Mac, but that's a very small percentage of those games.
Right.
There was some sale for, like, the entire 20-year collection of Tomb Raider games or something, or 15-year, whatever. And it was, I bought, like, a pile of Lara Croft games for PC. I don't know why.
Oh, I do that stuff all the time.
I have like 17 like Steam games of like Tomb Raider, and I'm just like, I don't want to play these.
When Force Awakens came out on Blu-ray, they put this deal on Vita, which was every Star Wars game they ever put on Vita bundled for like $17. And I was like, oh, I love every Star Wars game they ever put on Vita. And I bought them and I played like Battlefront 2 for 20 minutes on a plane. I was like, that was fun. And then I never touch the rest of them again. And I've got to be careful with stuff like that, because I do feel like digital hoarding is just as dangerous as physical hoarding.
Because it doesn't take up any space, so there's not a thing reminding you. And but it also sucks because it follows you. You know?
Yeah, well, you turn on your PS4 and you have that huge nav bar and there's a bunch of big squares being like, hey, remember me?
Yeah.
And you're like, stop it.
I'll see stuff in my downloads or my application library or whatever that I'm like, that I got from PlayStation Plus just so I had it in case.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I'm like, Who downloaded this? Who put this at my machine? And it's not even there. It's just a little square.
Yeah.
It's so weird. My Xbox One is forever haunted by Rare Replay because of like the 49 games it downloads. And I'm like, oh, like I'm really happy I have three of these, but I don't ever want to go back to most of them.
I think on in terms of like on a coverage front, for doing our jobs, like I want to do what I did all of last year, which is try to be more optimistic and be more positive about stuff. I'm seeing there's like so much. I'm cynical as hell at times. Everyone knows that. I think everybody is. But there's so much cynicism and negativity that comes out of games media now and comes out of YouTubers now and Twitch streamers now. And I think there's just this like there's a certain level of toxicity that's just like, I'm the hateful game farter or whatever. And a lot of it is funny, but a lot of it is also just like, oh, you're just crapping on things for clicks.
Yeah.
And I don't want to be that guy. Yeah. I also don't want to be this guy that's like, everything's great, everything's awesome, and I'm optimistic. But just being a little more measured, being a little more optimistic, playing games that maybe I normally wouldn't have played playing consoles that I wouldn't have played normally, like just being more open about stuff, I think it's immensely important.
I want to extend the length of my handshakes by like 30%.
Can you do that? Like,
yeah,
and I want to reach in your arm.
Give me a 2016 shake. So that's like a normal. Oh, wow, that's a real wet one. All right, let's try it again. So give me a 2016er. All right, so that's a normal one.
Yeah.
Again, still real wet. So, like, just like that.
Golden and I are doing a new shake for 2016. It's called the Milker. You want to milk that one?
You like just got some fresh mozzarella to pop it over there?
I'm going to be honest. We're running very late, and I have to do the next podcast.
All right, fine. Let's get out of here.
Let's open presents real quick. We got some packages. If you want to send us packages, send them to Podcast Beyond, care of IGN, 625 2nd Street, 4th floor.
Party mix.
San Francisco, 94107, California.
Do we know who
party mix?
Good God.
Do we know who sent this?
Dense mix? Okay. What do we got? Hi, Beyond Crew. I just wanted to show my appreciation for all we do. Thank you all for being constant source of kindness, laughter, inspiration. I would like a longer message, but Amazon had a cutoff. Kyle Bourne, part one of two.
It says assorted party candy party mix, assorted candy party mix, 6x6x6 bulk box, fireballs, airheads, jawbusters, laugh. All right. Then it stops.
Hell yeah.
Let's open this.
Big dense thing of
mix. We got to save some for next week.
You're going to start throwing the candies everywhere. We're probably going to get more by next week. This one's a mysterious one.
These are little guys.
This is, what do we got? A gift for you. Oh, it's, wow, it's wrapped and everything. What does it say? Is there a note? There's a note. I'm going to read it real fast. Part two of two. As a second part of my gift here is an example of the inspiration you've given me. I know you are all creators, so I hope you like it. Email my thoughts, KyleDeBoren@gmail.com.
Kyle.
Thanks, Kyle.
This is awesome.
We can put the entire snack mix.
So you can get Amazon to wrap stuff for you, and when they do, it looks like this, which is very funny.
I'm going to put the party mix in this bag later. It's going
to
be a very good
if you're not, if you're just listening to the show, it's like a bag made of Oscar the Grouch.
Yeah, it's like a green bag.
A book?
Oh, crap. Kyle wrote a book. It's called Uprising.
Ooh. Oh, wow. That's awesome.
Hell yeah.
You wrote a book, dude. That's incredible.
Yeah,
that's
badass.
Go check out Kyle's book, Uprising.
Yeah.
Which I assume is awesome.
There's one more here. Also, it's really weird to read a note, half a note, and then go to the next one. Banana candies!
What?
Podcast Beyond, Max, Alana, Marty, Brian, et al. Who the hell is Al?
Pineapple cakes.
Or banana candies.
Who's
oh, pineapple
Al?
Cakes. Oh, I can't read this whole thing. My name is Austin. I'm a fan of your work. More importantly, the show that becomes an integral part of my office. Thank you. In sum, thank you and keep up the good work. I wish you all and your family good health and hope you have another booming year at IGN. I thought this said boning year, and I was like, yeah, me too. Anyway... Please save an extra for Alana. Alana's in the control room right now. Alana, you may have one of the pineapple cakes. Anyway.
You can have mine, Alana. I'm not eating sweets this month.
But they're from Japan.
I know, but that's
Konnichiwa!
Anyway, thank you, Austin. And thank you, Kyle, for sending us presents in the mail. Thank you guys all for watching and listening and whatever. And
Next week's episode will be like 12 hours late.
Yes, it'll be very late. It'll be very special,
Well, it's
though.
Not very late. It's 12 hours late.
Tell them why.
Next week's
hit him with it.
It's going to be 12 hours late so I could talk about why I was in Japan over the weekend and why I haven't slept at all in the last like 48 hours. But it's a very cool reason for people who enjoy this podcast.
Yeah.
Ooh.
You know, they say a good cure for traveling is pineapple cakes. Who doesn't love a nice pineapple cake after a long traveling time? If you have emails or whatever you want to send them to it, it's just beyond@IGN.com. I love a pineapple cake at a Tuesday afternoon. Bye.
Beyond. Bye.
Hello, friends. This is Mark Nell, executive producer of the Table Read podcast, where imagination meets performance. As we wrap up an incredible season one, we want to take a moment to express our heartfelt gratitude to each and every one of you who tuned in and supported us on this amazing journey. Season one was nothing short of extraordinary. We delved into captivating scripts that transported us to worlds beyond our imagination, thanks to the brilliant writers who delivered these works. But what really brought these stories to life were the talents of our amazing actors. But wait, the excitement doesn't end there. As we bid farewell to Season 1, we are thrilled to announce the launch of Season 2. Get ready for more gripping narratives, more unforgettable characters, and more mesmerizing performances that will keep you on the edge of your seat. We have some big surprises coming. The Force will definitely be with you. So stay tuned, stay engaged, and most importantly, stay excited. From all of us at the Table Read Podcast, thank you, and let's make Season 2 even more memorable together.